Hello, my name is Cornell Green, and I am the Failure Guy. Welcome back to the podcast. On this premiere event of our fourth season of the Failure Guy podcast, I'd like to welcome back our guest, Hal Eisenberg. Hal, thank you for joining us once again, and welcome back to the conversation.
Cornell, I am so happy to be here. I had such a great conversation with you last time, even though I completely hijacked your show and went off on a tangent. I was like, we got to do part two.
Yes. Well, no, it's never a hijack, because like I say, that's why I start and I say welcome to the conversation, not the interview, because it genuinely is a conversation. We found out that we had that connection with music, and we both fell down the rabbit hole. We said hello to the Caterpillar and the Mad Hatter on the way on our trip. And then we finished the first hour. It's like, you know, we never actually started talking about Hal, which is kind of the point of the Failure Guy podcast. People don't tune in to listen to me talk about myself. That could be a whole other thing. But it's like, you know, I got to get you back so that we can talk about you, which is kind of the point and purpose. We did find out some things about you, but your story is so fascinating and amazing. And I did want people to really get to know you. And that's why I asked you to come back. And I can't think of a better way to start the new year and the new season than to bring you back. So first of all, let's once again start by familiarizing you, for those who maybe didn't hear the first part of our conversation last year, with who you are and some of the things that we're going to be talking about in this next hour.
Yeah, I think that's always a loaded question. Like, who am I? I think, you know, by license, I'm a social worker, but obviously there's so many layers to that. I've had an incredible journey of ups and downs and failures and lessons. But as you know, you have to fail to succeed. There's no doubt about that. My passion is geared toward transforming the education system, but I think that's really just where my passion lives. My true vision in life is for everyone to see their power within themselves, to see the light that's in themselves, and to learn how to turn on that switch instead of being, you know, kind of going down that rabbit hole of negativity and thinking they don't have hope. I want everybody to know that about themselves. And I do that through many things. I do it through music, through writing books, through the work I do in the school system. And it's kind of what I live, eat, and breathe for.
Okay, well, that is so fascinating. And particularly, you know, I liked your comment about having people seeing the light within themselves. Yeah. And so first of all, how long have you worked within the school system in your capacity as a social worker?
I've been in the New York City school system now for almost 28 years, which when I say that number, it's mind blowing, because I also tell my students I'm not a day older than 33, and I've been doing it since I was five. And I'm scared about our future because most of them believe me. So
it's like, you know, that math doesn't math, right?
Exactly. I love when there's a student also that kind of starts to figure it out, and they get that crinkly face and they're trying to do the math and they're like, wait, he's 33? But
yeah, it's pretty crazy. So social work. I mean, there's been television series about it. Of course, there's been a lot of movies and all this kind of stuff. Sure. And I'm sure people have lots of stereotypes of what they think social work is about. And it's actually an umbrella term. So a couple of questions. First of all, what do you think most people hear when they hear social work in the context of the educational system? And what is it to you? Second question. And then third part, how does your approach differ from your typical, if there's even such a thing, as your typical academically based social worker? So first, what do you think most people hear when they hear social work?
I think there's this stereotype, and obviously I can't speak for everyone, but I think when you hear the word social worker, you get this vision of a couch and, you know, laying down on the couch and somebody with a notepad saying, tell me your problems, tell me how that feels, which I think is the worst question any social worker can ask. Like, how does that make you feel? I also get, I don't know why you asked that question. I get the I get the old Snoopy, Charlie Brown, vision of the booth that says, psychiatrist 5 cents.
Right, Lucy with the with her hustle.
Yes, exactly. And to me, social work is so much more than that. It's so much label. It's a title. It's a license. It's technically what I do, but it's not who I am.
Right. Okay. So second part, and I don't even know if I can remember the questions in the order that I asked them because I just was riffing off the top of my head. But when what do you see the purpose, the function of social work in the context? Because you're not like a doing the couch trip, having kids, like you said, sitting there, tell me about your problem modes. How was your childhood? I'm still in it, in the context of the school system, what is the traditional or typical, if there is such a thing, per point and purpose of social work in the school system?
It's an interesting question, Cornell, because I think the way school systems are designed now, I think it probably depends on the particular school and what their needs are. There's so many different aspects to social work, and there's so many different branches that you can go off of. It's really interesting. When I look back at why I, became a social worker, there's two reasons. There's the humorous reason, which was I was trying to impress a girl, and I wanted a date, right? So I went to school and went into social work. But the more serious reason is I fed into society's model of that economic model of if you wanted to be noticed for what you wanted to do, you needed the degree, you needed the license. And I no longer believe that that is true, though in many fields, you need that quote unquote credibility. So I was doing what was considered the umbrella of social work, and I hit this glass ceiling, and I couldn't go anywhere further in my career, even though I was already starting to build a company. I already had this vision for the world. But to be invited to the table, I needed to have letters, next to my name. I needed that license. So from the get-go, I always have like kind of redefined what social work, is. I went into the school system going, I'm going to shake things up. I have a vision. I have a dream. So my answer to that question has really been blurred from day one. From a school's perspective, it's honestly to fill check boxes. We need counseling done in this area. We need, this supported. We need to look good. So I need to make sure that there's a social worker in the building. But the sad thing is not even all schools have a social worker. Yeah.
Okay.
That
And
was a
like,
lot. I just
no. Like so many things in our society, there's the surface, the ostensible reason that, back in the day somebody had genuine interest and thought it was a good idea. And then over time it's just like, well, this is the thing that we need to do. Why do we need? Because we need to do it, because it's on the
Right.
thing. And do we have one? Yeah, okay, good. What are they doing? Doesn't matter. We've got one. They're in there, they're in the office, we check the box off. Inspectors come around and say, yep, no, there he is. There she is. See, social worker, there's the thing. Bye. And
Yeah.
the intention, the actual sincere intention kind of gets lost in that, which leads me to my third question. And again, hearkening back to what you said in your introduction, to have people, see the light within themselves. What is
Yeah.
Hal Eisenberg's approach to social work, as opposed to whatever the heck the official thing is, and who really cares at this point?
Sure. I love that question. For me, social work is holding space for somebody, holding the container for somebody to explore themselves, to be in power, and to figure out how to elevate who they are. Explore, empower, elevate is kind of what I would describe as my version of social work. It's having a safe space for people to navigate life every day to figure out like who they are, what they're about. And then that's not sit on the couch and I'm going to tell you how to fix your problems type of mentality. That's about commitment and consistency and everyday conversations and kind of flowing with people's energy and challenging them, you know, in the right moments to be like, hey, have you thought of things this way? And also not being social work to me isn't, there's this mentality in society, whether it's social work or the medical field, it's like you have the license, so you need to you must have all the answers. I never go into social work that way. It's a conversation, right? It's I learn just as much from my students as they learn from me. And I said day one, I set that up with them when they come into my office. I say, listen, I don't know everything. I have a lot of experience that I'm more than happy to share with you if you want to have those conversations, but I am never going to tell you like this is the way, right? We're going to explore together. I'm going to learn from you, you're going to learn from me. We're on equal playing field from day one. And what
Okay.
that does is it sets up a level of respect. It sets up a level of authenticity. And they're like, oh, like my voice matters, my life matters. And that to me is what social work is making sure that somebody knows that their life matters, that we're in this together. And I'm not perfect, right? I have my days, I have my good days and my bad days. And let's journey together. I also let them know that I feel blessed to be in this role. I don't know how I got into this role. I don't know how this, you know, how I became this person, but social work to me is like, it's a blessing, you know, that I get to journey with whoever's in front of me.
Okay, wow, that's very powerful. Now you mentioned sort of three phases of your approach: explore, empower, and elevate. And first of all, I'm kind of a nutcase for alliteration, so I like the fact that it's three E's, you know.
Yes.
And I'd like to sort of walk through all three of those and how that
Sure.
what that looks like in terms of dealing with a student. And you know, so first of all, exploration.
Yeah.
Just give us an idea. What does that look like as you explore with one of your charges, if you will?
First of all, it's listening. It's not cutting somebody off. Really listening. It starts off with listening intently, having, you know, somebody feel safe. And then asking clarifying questions that might be layered with hints of, you know, well, can you share this with me? It's designed for the person in front of you to go a little deeper, right? So you want to create that space for them to explore all the possibilities. Like, why was mom angry with you? You know, did something happen? You know, what do you think mom's going through? You know, why do you think that teacher, you know, gave you so much homework? And you know, it could be dramatic. I don't know, you know, but what you're doing is you're helping them to explore, and then they process through at their own pace.
Okay. Wow, and that's actually, again, fascinating. That's why I asked you the question, because I knew there was going to be an interesting answer. And I'm sure that helps create a context of like, I have a very good friend that I speak with quite a lot, and he always uses the term, what is it, to redirect and not to correct,
I
you
love
know.
that. Absolutely, 100%. Yes.
Yeah, and I like that. And that kind of segues, I see how that segues into, you know, from exploration to empowerment. Now, empowerment, kind of an overworked term. It's almost kind of being
100%.
like a buzzword, but I of course get in the context of our conversation that it's more than just, you know, lip service to you. And I can see as you're walking through how your exploration aspect works, I can see how that will segue into empowering
Yeah.
this student. So say a little bit about that part.
You know, I could sum it up. You know, I like alliteration also, so that's why I stuck with the word empowerment. But empowerment to me is actually I translate it to two other words, and it's what's possible. You know, it was one of the things that I discuss with people. I share with them that in any situation that I'm in, where I'm challenged or I'm exploring or I'm questioning or I have some kind of heavy emotion where it's hurt, pain, anger, frustration. I've trained the muscle, and it is a muscle. It's like going to the gym. You have to work this muscle out. I train myself to stop, to respect the emotion that I'm in, to realize that whatever I'm feeling is valid, and to ask myself the question, what's possible here? What's possible with my anger toward my mom? Is there a wound that I need to heal? Do I need to learn patience? Do I need to learn communication? Do I need to plan an exit strategy from my home, because, I just not seeing eye to eye, So the quest for empowerment, and when you give somebody that simple tool, what's possible here, that's empowerment, because now you give them the ownership of saying, I'm not the victim, right? Yes, my life feels a mess, but the mess is a message, right? There
I
there's
like that.
the wound is wisdom, right? What's possible here? So that's what empowerment is to me.
Okay, and I like that distinction because it's not.